I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, we're having trouble reaching our scheduled guest, Andrew Coburn, right now. We're going to pick up where we left off talking to Glenn Moberg about jobs in Wisconsin, and we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. What do you think Wisconsin needs to do to create more jobs? Do you think the state is on the right track when it comes to the economy and job creation? If you had advice to give to Governor Walker, to state legislators, to a Democratic gubernatorial candidate, call us at 800-642-1234. Strike that. It looks like we have our guest coming on the line. I'm going to turn around and look at the call-in person here. Andrew Coburn is coming on with us in just a moment. He's going to talk about his brother's book. Irish-born journalist Alexander Coburn came to the U.S. in 1972, set out on a career challenging some of the most powerful people and institutions in American politics.
He chronicled 18 years worth of stories and experiences in a new book, putting the finishing touches on it just days before he died of colon cancer last year.
The book is called A Colossal Wreck, a road trip through political scandal, corruption, and American culture. We talked to Alexander's brother, Andrew Coburn. He's a journalist and author. He wrote the introduction to A Colossal Wreck. Andrew, welcome to the show. Andrew, welcome to the show. Are you sorry, I don't think we had you up there.
Can you hear me?
I can, yes. So talking about Alexander Coburn, reading through his work in this new book and in the past, it struck me that this is a journalist who's not necessarily out to make friends with his writing. He didn't mind who he offended. Can you talk about that attitude toward journalism?
Well, he believed, you know, one of his favorite sort of aphorisms about newspapers was from Joseph Pulitzer, which is, you know, a newspaper should have no friends. Alexander had a lot of friends, but he didn't think that, you know, back scratching was part of the agenda. He thought that he wrote it like he saw it. And so, if you read the book, you can see there's a lot of people he speaks, you know, very commendably about. But when he caught someone out, he thought they were behaving badly, he said so.
He came at the world from a perspective, I think, loosely speaking, fairly speaking, on the left. We can talk about some labels people have tried to attach to him. That didn't mean he supported the Democratic Party in the United States or President Obama or President Clinton. Can you talk about what he thought about those two political figures?
Well, I think one of the very first times he read about Obama, he called him slithery. So from that, you can see what he thought about him. He just thought, you know, he thought they were both from the same mold, you know, ambitious fellows who were prepared to, you know, who got themselves elected were on a sort of left agenda. If you remember Obama's 28 campaign, it was actually pretty, you know, very progressive and, you know, inspired so many people, especially young people. And then when he got in, as Alexander had predicted, you know, he immediately, you know, hires basically the upper tier of Citibank to Citicorp to run the economic front, people chosen by Robert Rubin, and pursued a, you know, as now many people I think would now agree, pursued a very, well, let's be polite and call it conservative centrist agenda. And really the same with Clinton. I mean, you know, just think about Clinton's, welfare so-called reform. I mean, I don't want to spend all your time discussing all that, but I'm just saying that Alexander saw them as having betrayed, you know, the principles, the professed principles on what they got elected, and that's why he wrote the way he did.
You challenge a couple of labels in your foreword to the book that people put on Alexander. People called him un-American or anti-American. You, right off the bat, don't buy that.
Absolutely not. Alexander loved America. He spent a large part of his life, you know, living in England and Ireland, where we grew up. But this was the country in where he was happy that he adopted. He became a citizen, became an American. And actually, he knew the place incredibly well. What he really liked to do was to get in one of the many fairly decrepit classic cars that he collected over the years. I think he left 10 when he died. And drive around the country, you know, to nooks and crannies that, you know, most people would never hear of, let alone visit. And in fact, one of his closest friends was a classic Chrysler dealer in near Spartanburg, South Carolina, Dave Eller. And Alexander would, you know, go to Dave and pick up yet another something on which he'd set his heart, you know, 62 Chrysler Imperial or something and drive it back across the country with many encounters with AAA men and speed cops and other interesting aspects of the fauna along the way.
He'd challenge the highway patrol sometimes. I think I read that this car was not physically capable of going as fast as they claimed to have clocked him.
Well, that's right. I think that was the 64 Newport that spent 6 years in a field, and birds had built nests in it. So I was amazed it went anywhere but downhill, but still he got it on the road.
Another label you challenge is the idea of calling him a contrarian. He definitely has a contrary perspective. Why can't we call him a contrarian as a journalist?
It's not so much. It's my irritation of the actual word. I think it implies people who call themselves contrarians. It's just like being contrary to something just for the sake of being contrary, which wasn't his attitude at all. He didn't, and unlike some people we could mention, he didn't sort of try and, you know, get publicity or promote himself by being, the person who always took the opposite side. People call him that because he took some positions that, you know, surprised people. He didn't sort of fit, you know, he didn't sort of get up in the morning and put on the uniform of, you know, your standard left, you know, liberal left commentator, you know, complete with, you know, cap and boots and bell and whistle. He, as I said at the beginning, he called it like he saw it. So, for example, he was he frequently wrote about the Fully Informed Jury Association, which is actually considered normally a sort of right-wing, almost a sort of, you know, very right-wing cause. You know, the traditional American belief that a jury can do what it wants without being bossed around by judges and lawyers. Now, that's, you know, that fits into the right-wing slot, and yet he believed in it and said so. There were many examples like that.
Well, though coming from the left, he saw things to like in the conservative populist movement in this country.
He did. I mean, I've just mentioned one, but he liked the sort of state, you know, exactly the conservative populist tradition in this country. And he had a pretty keen nose for liberal hypocrisy. I mean, for example, if you look through the book, I think there are frequent sallies against the eugenicists, you know, people who, you know, the big promoters of eugenics earlier in the 20th century in America, who were all liberals, a fact he never failed to point out. So, I mean, you might think on a superficial, you know, take that he had a sort of very zigzag political perspective, but actually it's a very straight line. I mean, he was for us against them. He's for the people. He was against the imposition of big, you know, big money, big, you know, nanny state, you know, dominant authoritarian government in whatever form it took. So actually, I always regard Alexander as having pursued a very undeviating course, actually, throughout his, certainly all the time he lived here.
If people working in the mainstream media or independent journalism were to take home a lesson or two from your brother, what would you say they should take with them?
Be honest. Don't, always look for, always look for what they're really saying. Don't follow sort of, you know, the party lines, because they'll certainly take you on an undulating course. I think, stick up for what is right. That sounds kind of trite and pat, but it's, you know, if you look at the mainstream media, you find a lot of cases where that doesn't happen.
Do you think we need more journalism from a perspective as opposed to an attempt at balanced or neutral reporting?
Well, I think everyone should try and be, you know, balanced or neutral. But I mean, that's, but at the same time, you admit everything is from perspective. I mean, you know, there's no such thing as, you know, completely. I mean, it's a myth and a fiction that there are such things as unbiased reporters. I mean, you should differentiate that from honest reporting. I mean, we should all be honest in our reporting and, you know, get the facts right and, you know, be fair in presenting, you know, whatever facts are relevant. But to say, you know, I'm absolutely unbiased, like, say, the New York Times does, when it clearly isn't, I think, is a hypocrisy and should be avoided at all costs, which Alexander certainly did and urged others so to behave.
Andrew, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, you're welcome.
That was Andrew Coburn. He's a journalist, author, brother of the late Alexander Coburn. Alexander's last book is A Colossal Wreck, A Road Trip Through Political Scandal, Corruption, and American Culture.